जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय गोपी जानवाला गिरिवर धारी। जय गोपी जानवाला गिरिवर धारी। यशोदनंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यशोदनंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरवन छारी। यमुना तीरवन छारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय गोपी जानवाला गिरिवर धारी। यशोदनंदन ब्रजन रंजन यशोदनंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरवन छारी। यमुना तीरवन छारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय प्रभुपद जय प्रभुपद जय प्रभुपद शिल प्रभुपद। Prabhupad, 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 Jaya, Jaya, Prabhupad.
Jam Vishwapad Paramahansa, Parivaj Charasata, Shashimil A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Shri Prabhupad ki, Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda ki, Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda ki, All grace assembled devotees. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 24, Text 28. Bahu janma vipakvena samyag yoga samadhina drashtum yatante yataya Shunyagareshu yatpadam Bahu janma vipakvena samyag yoga samadhina dashtum yatante yataya shunyagareshu yatpada bahu janma vipakvena samyag yoga samadhina dashtum yatante yataya shunyagareshu yatpada. Please chant. Bahu janma vipakvena samyak yoga samadhina dashtum yatante yataya shunyagareshu yatpadam. Bahu janma vipakvena samyag yoga samadhina tayataya shunyagareshu yatpadam. Bahu janma vipakvena samyag yoga samadhina dashtam yatante yataya shunyagareshu yatpadam. Bahu janma vipakvena samyag yoga samadhina dashtam yatante yataya shunyagareshu yatpadam. Let's do it, do it. Bahu, many. Janma, after birth. Vipakvena, which is mature. Samyak, perfect. Yoga samadhina, by trance in yoga. Drashtum, to see. Yatante, they endeavor. Yataya, the yogis. Shunya agareshu, in secluded places. Yat, whose? Padam, feet. Translation by His Divine Grace, Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. After many births, mature yogis, by complete trance in yoga, endeavor in secluded places to see the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport. Some important things are mentioned here about yoga. The word bahu, janma vipakvena, means after many, many births of mature yoga practice. In other words, samyag yoga samadhina means by complete practice of the yoga system. Complete practice of yoga means bhakti yoga. Unless one comes to the point of bhakti yoga or surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one's yoga practice is not complete. This same point is corroborated in the Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Bahunam Janmanam Ante. After many, many births, the jnani who has matured in transcendental knowledge surrenders unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Kardava Muni repeats the same statement. After many, many years and many, many births of complete practice of yoga, one can see the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord in a secluded place. It is not that after one practices some sitting postures, he immediately becomes perfect. One has to perform yoga a long time, many, many births to become mature. And a yogi has to practice in a secluded place. One cannot practice yoga in a city or in a public park and declare that he has become God simply by some exchange of dollars. This is all bogus propaganda. Those who are actually yogis practice in a secluded place, and after many, many births, they become successful, provided they surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the completion of yoga. Om Agyanantimanandasa Grandinachalaka Chakshurumantanasa Smashagurinva. So Kardama Muni, he's now reflecting, now that, you know, he's done so many things. He's married Devahuti, he married the king's daughter and emperor's daughter. And he did all these austerities. Lord Vishnu appeared. And then he asked, of course, he asked for service. He asked for a boon for a wife, and he got the wife. And then, you know, he created a palatial flying palace. And then, you know, they flew around, and then they had kids. And now finally, and then all the daughters were married off. And now there's Kapiladev, the son, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who came as the son. And so now he's speaking to Kapiladev, and he's saying these verses, these beautiful verses. And he's saying that, he's saying, after many births, mature yogis, by complete trance in yoga, endeavor in secluded places to see the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yeah, this verse is a reflection on his own life, because he himself is a great yogi. You know, he did all this mystic yoga, he did all these austerities for 10,000 years, and now he's reflecting that, yeah, all these years of trance and yoga, all these years of samadhi, all these years of practice, the culmination is that we surrender, not just see, but surrender to the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality Godhead. And so that's one big reason why he's mentioning this verse, mentioning this point right now to Kapiladev, that yeah, that one can do all these various yoga postures, we can do all, and you know, what to speak of proper yoga, you know, mystic yoga that Kardama Muni did and others do. But then Prabhupada points out that, well, forget that. People claim that, you know, they do some yoga, just on a physical level, on a superficial level, and Prabhupada even mentions they do it in exchange for dollars. And so they do it in exchange for dollars, and then they claim themselves, and they can claim themselves to be God, you know, and normally they claim themselves to be self-realized, self-enlightened. But Prabhupada points out that not beyond that, they claim themselves to be God just by, and just Prabhupada's driving that point across how ridiculous that can be. And here is an actual yogi, Kardama Muni, who has done all these austerities, who knows mystic yoga. He knows he has all the siddhis. He has all the siddhis that all these mystic yoga gives. He has these siddhis. You know, that you can become smaller than the smallest, bigger than the biggest. You know, and you go to another place as soon as you think of it. You can transport yourself. He has all those various powers, those siddhis. But he has all that. But his ultimate conclusion in this verse is that, yeah, the ultimate goal of yoga is, yeah, you can have all that, but ultimately you have to surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And it's amazing. There's so many people in this world. There's so many humans. And there's so many living beings, rather. You know, there's living beings that live only for one human day. That's like us compared to the demigods, right? There's so many living entities that live for pretty much one human day. And then one human day, they perform all the activities. They take their birth, they go on dates, they find a wife, they find a spouse. Then they have kids, and you know, they raise their kids, and the kid lives the next day. And those living entities live for one day, and then they complete that life cycle, and then they go on a higher life. You know? And so our human form, and of course there's humans, and then there's other living entities that could live for centuries. You know, there's tortoises that lives for a few hundred years and so forth. And so all these living entities, doesn't matter really if they're living for one human day or they're living for hundreds of years, you know, for centuries. Or there's trees out there. I mean, there's trees that are thousands of years old. But all these living beings do different activities in their own life, right? Some do such great things that they're remembered for centuries, you know, for years later, and even in the material realm. And some just live their life, they do their thing, you know, they accomplish whatever they accomplish in that lifetime. But Kardama Muni's point is that all that, and someone might even just be a mystic yogi. They do yoga, you know, they do their mystic yoga for thousands of years in austerities. But his point is that all that is incomplete unless one really surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that's why in the Bhagavatam, it brings up often and often again. In the first canto and second chapter, there's this verse, which I'm forgetting, Shrama Eva Hi Kevalam. There's this verse. Does anyone remember how that verse starts? Dharma? धर्मस्व अनुष्ठिता पुंसाम विश्वक्सेना कथासीय नोत्पाद्य यदि रतम क्षमा वै केवलम थैंक यू फॉर या सो दैट वन वन्स ऑक्युपेशनल ड्यूटी शुड लीड वन to actually serving Krishna, to Krishna. If it doesn't do that, then it's shrama eva hi kevalam. There's this shrama, you know, shram, just parishram means labor, just useless labor. Bhagavatam claims it's useless labor. And then we have ashrama, where there's no shrama, where you can actually live in Krishna consciousness. You know, you can actually grow in Krishna consciousness. That's ashram. And then there is shram, where it's just useless labor. So yeah, shrama eva hi kevalam. So yeah, goal of human life, be it a mystic yogi, be it an engineer, be it a little insect that lives only for one day, you know, whatever it is, one should really, the goal should be that, yeah, you develop the love for Krishna, develop, you know, surrender the lotus feet of Krishna. So that's one big point that Kardamuni points out. And by comparison, Kardamuni has done everything that a human being can do. You know, if you really think about it, you know, he's a mystic yogi, and I was just thinking in regular terms, you know, what does a human being do in 2026? They grow up, they get an education, they get a house, they get real estate, they get, you know, they get a spouse, they grow their kids, and then you know, and then they leave their body, and so he did all those things, but in much grander scale. You know, he did many austerities. People do austerities well. He did 10,000 years of austerities. You know, people marry a spouse well. He married the king's daughter, you know. And then, of course, he saw Vishnu also in between. He also had darshan of Vishnu. And people get one house well. He had a, you know, flying palace. He had all the real estate that he could just come up with real estate, you know. He was the biggest real estate developer that is in the world. So one can think that, oh, I can do so many things, but here is Kardamuni who's achieved all these things through mystic yoga. But again, his point is that it does not really matter till it culminates in surrendering into seeing the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So yeah, one can do so many things. I was reading this book. I came across this book actually yesterday. It was by this nurse in hospice care, and she wrote this book about this final moments of people's lives. And she was reflecting that what do people really think of at the time of, you know, when it comes close to death. And it was interesting. She was saying that, yeah, in American culture, she's not a devotee. It was a nurse in a hospice, a retired nurse. And she was saying in American culture, we don't like to talk about death. But she said, but it's important because she's seen many people leave their bodies. And she was sharing how a lot of the people, they just regret, you know, not building relationship, not really doing the things that they really wanted to do. And so she was saying it didn't really matter how much they had worked in their life, you know, what kind of job or career, you know, it mattered, of course, and when they were doing it, but at the time when life is ending, there were so many other things that were just so much more important to them. And so it just kind of reflects on this verse, on the philosophy of the Bhagavatam, that yeah, one can do so many things in life, but yeah, if one really doesn't dovetail that in Krishna consciousness, then that the soul kind of, you know, there's that regret, like, oh, I missed it, I missed the point, you know, I missed the point. And by good fortune, you know, we have acharyas like Prabhupada who's given us the goal of human life, that yeah, you actually have to not just do rituals, not just be religious or pious, but actually live a life where you're working towards seeing the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So yeah, Kardamuni, if there's anybody who can make that point really strongly, Kardamuni is one of them. You know, he achieved everything that one can achieve, you know, through mystic yoga. He can achieve practically anything one can achieve. But his point is like, no, you have to surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the fulfillment of life. And so, yeah, and then, of course, he's bringing up this point about trance and yoga, about mystic yoga and all that, also to make this point that, but yeah, that it's not enough, and one need not get proud also of whatever one does in one's life, be it in mystic yoga or just in regular life. Me and my wife, we were talking about the verse, and we were reflecting that, yeah, we do some little thing, or we have an idea about something, and you know, oh, I can just speak for myself. You know, I can have if somebody, you give an idea and somebody implements it, or you implement and you think this was my idea, I should have a plaque next to it, you know, with my name, like this was Shruti Sagar's idea. Yeah, we have one idea and we think, you know, I'm so great. But firstly, all the ideas that do come to us, you know, they come from Krishna. You know, I was reflecting on the verse where Krishna says in the Gita that I am the fire of digestion in the body. And I was thinking, we were thinking that, well, we can't even digest our own food, of the food that we put in our mouth. We can't even digest it without Krishna. If that fire of digestion is not there, you know, I'm sure at some point all of you have had that problem where the fire of digestion's gone down, and it's not fun when it goes down. And so that fire of digestion, which is Krishna himself, digests that food, and that's what gives us all the energy that the body needs. So this is from the basic minimum, you know, like we're just so dependent on Krishna. So yeah, what to speak of any small ideas that we have, you know, what's the big deal? So that is also Kadamuni's point that, yeah, one need not get proud of whatever achievement one has in life, or whatever ideas they have in life. Everything really comes from Krishna. And everything comes from the mercy of Krishna and the Vaishnavas and the Acharyas. Otherwise, it's just, yeah, it can fade away real fast. It can fade, everything can fade away really fast. So yeah, again, this great yogi making this point that, yeah, the ultimate goal is to surrender to Krishna, and one should not get really proud. One should really give credit to where it's due. Everything that we have, everything that we can do or achieve really comes from Krishna. There are times in our lives where we achieve so many things, we do so many great things, and one should remember that, yeah, this is Krishna's boon. And then there's times in our lives when we are not able to do, and this, you might be in the same position, same circumstance, we might not be able to do those big feats that we did in the past, and at the same time we can think like, okay, this is also Krishna's mercy. And we see that, of course, in the Bhagavatam. We see Arjuna is the example that Krishna gives to us. Arjuna fought in the battlefield. He won the war of Kurukshetra. But then later, when Krishna had left the planet, he couldn't even fight just some, you know, some cowherd people who were kidnapping the wives. Of course, we know those cowherd men were Krishna himself. But yeah, the point Bhagavatam makes is that, yeah, when Krishna was gone, he just felt so disempowered. So that's another point Kardamuni makes, that one should really not get proud. Another thing that Kardamuni is doing is that, you know, so far we have seen his life in this canto. We have seen how he has achieved so many things. He's got the king's daughter as his wife, and he made the palace in the air and everything, and anything and everything that one can do. And yeah, for an average person, that's like I want that, you know. And we see that in this world also. And whoever is a rich person and whatever opulence they have, the common person is like, yeah, I really want that. You know, I really want to be like this person. I really want to be rich. I want to have all these opulences. So Kardamuni has shown that he can have all these opulences. And now he's setting the scene. He's saying this verse, and he's setting the scene for Kapiladeva Muni's message. That now he's going to come, the Supreme Personality is going to come, and his message of bhakti is what is superior to all these other feats. So that's another thing he's doing now, that he's setting this scene for the audience of the Bhagavatam, that, yeah, fine, I've done all these things, but that's not what's important. It's important is to sit at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality, Godhead, sit at the lotus feet of the spiritual master, and to really hear his message on bhakti. And yeah, and the yogis, you know, we see it in the Bhagavad Gita and, of course, Bhagavatam. The yogis, Krishna declares that, yeah, it takes them many lifetimes. And he also says it's very hard for them. It's strife with, it's full of strife, basically, for a yogi to go through all that and then achieve liberation. So he's making that point here also that, yeah, one can be a yogi, go through that process, but it takes, firstly, it ends up in bhakti yoga, and secondly, it takes a long time. So that's the gift that we have from Srila Prabhupada and the previous acharyas, that they have given us the process of bhakti yoga, right? They've given us the process of bhakti yoga, and we can jump across. We don't have to do all the yama, niyama, all the, you know, the meditation. One can do all that. It's helpful, especially in this age. It's helpful to be able to, we have to sit and do japa, so it's helpful to learn how to sit and do some yama and niyamas, but that's not the goal. The goal is we can use it perhaps, you know, to be able to do, you know, more attentive japa, But the goal is not to really delve into yama, niyama, and all the other things. My wife is a yoga teacher. She knows all the terms, but I just remember yama, niyama. But the goal is not to do all the parts of Ashtanga yoga. The goal is to go into bhakti yoga, especially for this age. You know, for this age, bhakti yoga is the process to go in. And in bhakti yoga, chanting of the holy name, of course. So yeah, he's making all these points that, yeah, I've done all these things, but this is here. Now sit and listen to what Kapiladeva is going to say. And then the next chapter, we'll see how he's going to start talking to his mother, give all the instructions. And so yeah, he's preparing the audience for that. And another thing I was reflecting on was this mood of Kardama Muni. You know, for he's a mystic yogi, of course, and has done austerities for many years. And now there's the Supreme Personality of Godhead as his son. And his mood was not that I'm such a great yogi and I've seen Vishnu before, but his mood was of service. He was always doing service patiently. And of course his wife, Devahuti, was serving him patiently for many years, for a long time. And that mood reflects, our acharyas reflect that mood also. You know, all the Gaudiya Acharyas, they reflect that mood. Yeah, they do service in separation. They do service to their previous Acharyas. This do service to the spiritual master with the mood that, yeah, this is my offering. This is how I connect with Krishna. Not that they have this mood that, oh, I know Krishna. I've realized everything and so forth. But that's their mood. And Kardama Muni has the same mood that, yeah, I'm doing my service. And there is this mood of longing to do more and more, this mood of separation. And that's the mood of the Gaudiya Parampara, that yeah, this mood of really separation, of longing for service. And so the Acharyas have this mood. And of course, Srila Prabhupada, I was reflecting on this point of the yogis going to secluded places to see this lotus feet of the Supreme Personality Godhead. And I was thinking how Prabhupada, and many, of course, the Acharyas before, they went to different places to preach, to share Krishna consciousness. And when Prabhupada came to the West, I was thinking about how, in a sense, he felt secluded. He felt like he felt lonely the first year, at least, he was in New York. He felt lonely, and we see in Prabhupada Lilamrita how he shared that. He'd often go to the pier to look on the timetable when the ships are going back to India. And I think even in his diary notes, he was reflecting on, I think it was Lord Chaitanya's appearance day. And he was saying, oh, we are alone here in New York, and there must be so many big celebrations in Mayapur and Vrindavan. So he had that, you know, he was really, really feeling that separation. And so, yeah, we see that in Prabhupada's life also, and other acharyas also, where, yeah, they go to not necessarily secluded, meaning there's nobody else, but they go to secluded places to preach, you know, to really share Krishna consciousness and find those sincere souls. And so we see that. So in our lives also, we can have that sense of, you know, we can share Krishna consciousness. We can have that longing like, yes, let me do something for our previous acharyas. Let me do something for my spiritual master. And that's our way of really living slightly outside our comfort zone. Let me share this with others, and let me go to these secluded places where Krishna is not absent, but the people are absent-minded. Their minds are, Krishna is absent in their minds. So let me go to these places and share Krishna with them. So that's our austerity we can do, our practice we can do. And when we do that, of course, then we take on Lord Chaitanya's burden. And when we are taking Lord Chaitanya's burden, then he takes on our burdens. So in any shape or form, we don't have to go somewhere physically also nowadays. We can even preach online, you know, in any shape or form. Or just have that mood when we're doing any service, whatever we are doing. Like, okay, Krishna, please, I'm doing this for you. I'm doing this so that I can do my service nicely. I'm doing this so that people can see that, yeah, this is how devotees live and they can be inspired. There's so many ways to be Krishna conscious. So there's so many ways to be conscious of Prabhupada's mission, of being conscious of the Acharya's mission. But yes, but that was Kardama Muni, and yeah, he had this. He had the same mood. You know, I was thinking he had the similar mood that Acharyas have. They have the similar mood as Kardama Muni. And one of the examples I was thinking of somebody doing service for a really long time was from the Ramayana. I was reflecting on Shabari. Yeah, Shabari was this really pious lady, and she was in her guru's ashram, Matanga's ashram. And Matanga was there in his ashram in the forest, and he had all these disciples, and they're all doing service for years. And when it was time for Matanga to leave, and he and his disciples, they were leaving the planet, they were, you know, they're leaving, going back to Godhead. And then she was ready to go with him, and he said, "No, you have to wait. You have to wait and keep doing your services and wait for Lord Ram to come." And so she was very sad, and she wanted to go with her guru. But he said, "No, you have to wait." So she waited. She waited faithfully, and every day she would do her service, maintain the ashram, and she was waiting for Lord Ram. And she would have, you know, she would have something to offer to him every single day. She was waiting with patience and with that longing, and then mood of separation. And we see that often in our lives also, especially when we join the Hare Krishna movement, and we become a devotee in the Gaudiya line. Krishna gives that special taste. I'm sure every devotee has that taste of separation or longing at some point in time. Either something happens, or in our hearts we realize how far we are from Krishna. You know, how much what is really in our hearts, and we realize, and then Krishna inspires that longing in our hearts. Like, actually, I really want to be Krishna conscious. You know, and it comes at different points in time. It comes in different phases. But going back to Shabari, yeah, she was waiting for Lord Ram, and finally Lord Ram comes. And the Ramayana has explained that Ram and Lakshman, they came across this area in the forest, and Lakshman noticed that there were all these flowers, and everything was growing, and everything was so beautiful, and it smelled really nice. And Lord Ram said, "Yeah, Matanga, the sage Matanga used to be here, and all these flowers, and everything is grown because of from the sweat of the labor of his disciples. Because of that, these beautiful flowers have grown, and you can smell it, and it's just so beautiful." And then finally, they came across Shabari. And then Shabari, what does she do, of course? Then she gives them fruits that are half-eaten or nibbled into. And Lakshman gets upset, like, "What are you doing? You know, this is Lord Ram, he's the king. And you can't do that. This is not proper etiquette." And Lord Ram is like, calm down. So, he takes her offering. So yeah, with us also, whatever we have, we can offer it to Krishna, you know. And we have our little hearts with our, you know, with our feelings and misgivings, but Krishna kindly accepts it, you know. Krishna kindly accepts all, with all the nibble marks that are there in our offering, but Krishna still kindly accepts it. But yeah, but this mood of separation, there's so many examples in the Bhagavatam. Of course, there's Narada Muni also. He saw Krishna appeared, and then he left. And then after that, he had the longing and for Krishna again, like, "When will I see Krishna again? When will he appear in front of me again?" So this mood comes again and again in the Bhagavatam. Does anyone remember any other examples of pastimes where there's this, you know, mood of waiting or separation or longing? Yes, Prabhu? Parikshit Maharshi, yeah, thank you. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah, that was his name. He was the examiner. He was examining everywhere, right? Yeah, did you want to say more about it? Yeah. And just, yeah, when he saw Krishna in the womb, and then throughout his life, he was examining everywhere. Where is Vishnu? Where is Krishna? What was the name? Vishnu Ratha, right? Yeah, he was also, remembering Krishna, Vishnu all the time. What, any other examples? Of course, there's the famous example from the 10th canto, but that one, and who else? This mood of like longing and separation from Krishna. Yes, Prabhu? What is that? Mother Rukmini. Yeah. Rukmini was also waiting. She was waiting for Krishna to come get her and marry her. Yeah. Thank you, Prabhu. Yeah, it's such a beautiful story. She just got a message from this Brahmana, and then she heard about Krishna's qualities, and she just fell in love, and she was waiting for him. Yeah. Thank you, Prabhu. Did you have something, Ragat Magavan, today? Of course, yeah. I'll finally be able. Yeah. What's the name again, Prue? Mukunda Datta, yeah. 1 million births, wow. Yeah, he was still happy that after 1 million births, I'll see Lord Chaitanya. Yes, Prabhu? Yeah. Yeah, the gopis. Yeah, yeah, the gopis. Yeah, they had that mood of separation very strongly. We see that in different pastimes. Even when Krishna was around, they had that mood of separation. And then, of course, when he left Vrindavan, they had definitely had that mood of separation. And all the residents of Vrindavan, really, you know, that had that strong mood of separation. Even when Krishna would go to herd the cows during the day, you know, Mother Yashoda would just miss him. And she would wait, and she would hope that, you know, he comes back safely, and she would think of him the whole day. And then when she would start hearing the sounds of the cows, and she would hear the anklets and all that, then she would be like, all right, they're coming back. So a mood of separation and mood of longing. So yeah, yeah. What else? Any other personalities of pastimes where this, you know, this mood of separation really comes out? Yes, Prabhu? What's the name again? Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. There's a temple for that. There's also one of the gopas, right? Was it Subala? I can't remember now. It was one of the gopas. There, Krishna, was that? Lota Baba. That's the person? Okay, Lota Baba. So he was waiting for Krishna to come back to Vrindavan. Yeah, yeah. Just now coming, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Krishna tricks us sometimes. Krishna tells us, just now coming. And then we wait. Oh. When will he come back again? And that's the boon in itself, waiting for Krishna. That's what really, you know, helps our Krishna consciousness grow. What else? Any other personalities or pastimes? Huh? Mirabai? You said, oh yeah, yeah. Mirabai also had that sense of longing for Krishna. Yeah, she was waiting. Yeah, Mirabai. Who else? But yeah, so this verse, Kardamuni is really... yes, Prabhu, go ahead. Oh yeah, Bill Mangala Thakur. Yeah. Yeah, do you want to talk a little? Yeah, Krishna came to him. Yeah. Yeah, he had a whole journey, Bill Mangala Thakur. Yeah, he plucked his eyes, he was blind, he was waiting for Krishna, and Krishna came as Gopal. Yes, Prabhu? Tukaram. Okay. Could you share more about him? I actually don't know much about Tukaram. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Tukaram. Yeah, he was a great saint also. Yeah. All right. Tukaram. He's from West India. Yeah, he's a saint. Yeah, I don't know much of his life story either. But yeah, but he was also a great devotee, great Vaishnava. Yeah. And yeah, in the different pastimes in the Bhagavatam also, there's different... Yes, Prabhu? Of course, yeah, Mother Sita. Yeah, yeah, she was waiting for the longest time and she wouldn't give in. Yeah, when Hanuman went to Lanka to search for Sita, he was, you know, he went through different quarters and he was looking for Sita. And first he came to the chambers of, you know, there was different women, and then he came to the chamber of Ravana, and there was a woman next to Ravana. And he was like, is that Sita? And he was like, no, that can't be Sita. She is strict with his vow, and it can't be Sita. So he kept looking. And he finally came to Ashok Vatika, where Sita was kept, and he saw Sita all emaciated and waiting for Lord Ram. And he was like, yes, that's Sita. And she was singing Ram's glories. And he was like, that's Sita. So yeah, she was living in separation, and nothing could budge her from waiting for Lord Ram. And yeah. Mm-hmm. he was saying, Prabhu was talking about Vasudev and Devaki. They did all these austerities, right, in the previous life to have Krishna as a son. Was that, Prabhu? What's the last thing you said? What did you say? What's the last thing you said? Both of them who did austerities, you said? You said both of them did austerities?
No, I'm not sure whether it was one set or both of them. One of them did austerities for like 10,000.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Vasudeva and Devaki, they did austerities for a long time as Sitapa and Prishnigarbha, I believe that was the name, right? And they were doing austerities, and yeah, then Krishna said, oh yeah, well, Vishnu said, I'll come as your son, yeah. What? Oh, was the son, sorry. What was the name, Prabhu? Prangananda Prabhu, do you remember? Sutapa and was Prishnigarbha, yeah.
The Lord's name is
Prishnigarbha. Lord's name is Prishnigarbha. Oh, Prishni was the mother, yeah. Prishnigarbha was the son, yeah. Yeah, all right. But yeah, they also had that mood of separation, of course. You're longing to have Krishna as their son. Is there a mic, Prudy? We want to hear you, at least.
The Rupa Goswami Pada explained there is a three types of separation. One is called Bhuta Viraha, Bhavam Viraha, Bhavi Viraha. Mm-hmm. One separation, every day, the gopis or Brajavasi feels from Krishna, as you explained, Mother Yashoda feels, and then she goes outside and sees the sun, where is the location of the sun. So then she prays to the sun god, can you go down so my son can come back? And she worships sun in that sense. Mm-hmm. She prays, she fold her hand, please go down quickly so I can. And the dust, in that they are also in separation from Krishna. The dust are not dust of this world. Dust is predeposited with eternity and cognizant. The Vrindavan dust is a person. Each dust is a person, is a soul. They are also in separation. So Krishna comes and walks. And then the dust becomes so jubilant with the pleasure potency when Krishna touched that they creates a very dusty cloud. And Mother Yashoda sees from far. And she says, oh, he's here, nearby. He's not that far. Yeah. So separation actually creating a beautiful movement. Then the highest separation, that Bhavi Viraha, what will happen in future? That the gopis, when Krishna Balaram was taken by Akrura, that's why there's a famous verse, whole chapter, that Biraha Geet, that they sing. You know, it's very contagious. You relish that separation. And that Nanda Maharaj, when he was trying to End of the whole day, after Kongsa got killed, Nanda Maharaj could not take it. He went to the palace, the guest house. The Kongsa had a guest house for each sub-kingdom. Like Nanda Maharaj is under, Vrindavan was under Kongsa's regime. So there was a guest house for everybody. So Nanda Maharaj was staying there. After whole day passed, when Krishna Balaram came, it's very, very sweet that gopis, they knew that Krishna is not coming back. If you look at the 10th canto, 33rd chapter, there's a three times mentioned one word, Ayashe, I'll be back. That's the only word, that I'll be back. But they knew that he is going, he's not coming back. They are the only one. So their viraha is called Bhavi Viraha because they can see the future. Mother Yashoda is convinced by Nanda Maharaj, I'm going with him. I'll bring him back. Just tolerate one day. They're going for wrestling match. It's not a village boy. They're going to see a town first time. It's very exciting. So just tolerate one day, I'll bring them back.
Yeah.
But next day in the meeting, Nanda Maharaj could not take it in the wrestling arena. He went back to the guest house because the big kirtan going on, that finally the eighth child of Devaki Vasudev, the supreme god. So who is Krishna? Is Devaki and Vasudev's son. But Nanda Maharaj could not understand why they are saying like this. This is my son. So his separation was so intense, he could not take it, so he went to the guest house. Mm-hmm. So in the evening, I won't give the whole details. It's like a long story, but at the end was very sweet. I mean, the whole thing is sweet. At the end, when Krishna Balaram came back in the evening to the guest house, then they saw, you know, in Vedic culture, when you are depressed, you put your hand, go like this on the forehead. So Nanda Maharaj is crying like this. So then Balaram is saying, Baba, what are you doing? Why you are like this? I never saw you like this. First time. Move your hand. So he moved his hand. And then Nanda Maharaj, eyes were full of tears, and he's crying. He's missing Krishna and Balaram so much.
Mm-hmm.
Even though knowing Balaram is the son of Vasudev and Devaki, but he knows also that Balaram came from the Rohini and Vasudev. But they have their own perception. Balaram has his own perception. So he was comforting Nanda Baba, and then he said a very sweet thing. He said, a father who carries, from whose body the soul comes to the mother, is very important and respected as a father. But the father who raised the child is more important than the birth-giving father. So you are my father. I call you Nanda Baba. I'm not going to stay here one moment. I'm ready to go. And Nanda Maharaj is thinking, how can I take him? After whole 12 and a half years, finally they meet. And if I take him to Vrindavan, what everybody will think? What his father going to think? Vasudev, they were first time they saw him after whole 12 and a half years. So it was like a battle, you know, like a separation. That's why I like the way Rupa Goswami Pada says that separation keeps the love alive.
Mm-hmm.
Separation keeps the love alive.
Yeah.
This is how the core point. Anyway, and Balaram says, I don't want to stay even one moment because they say I'm a son of Vasudev and Devaki, but I know you are my father who raised me. Even if he is birth-giving father, but I am indebted to you. I want to go back. Nanda Maharaj was very puzzled. He could not say, okay, you come back. Because he knows the world will blame. Also, in his heart, he doesn't feel good that he is a son of Vasudev. Finally, they met. He should stay here. But then he could not say anything. So Krishna comes and say, Baba, can I intervene? And Nanda Maharaj remembers in 24th chapter, 10th canto, how the Govardhan pastime Leela took place and how Krishna's word was so sweet. You remember the conclusion? Nanda Maharaj says, whatever you want, we'll do it. Whether philosophy of Karma Mimamsa that Krishna presented is relevant or not, it doesn't matter. Because we love you so much, whatever you say, we'll do it, Krishna. So Nanda Maharaj allowed him, okay, you can speak. Before I began speaking, I just want to let you know, I grew up with my brother Balaram under your care. Whatever Balaram does, I'm not going to ever leave without Balaram, even for a moment. So whatever decision you make, now, Nanda Maharaj didn't even say that Balaram should stay here.
Mm-hmm.
But Krishna made it very clear that he's not going to stay separately from his brother. So it became so, deep separation feeling. What Nanda Maharaj is going to tell now to Balaram? Come with me to Vrindavan or stay here? So that's why the whole conversation, it's a long conversation between father and son. At the end, he says, the best thing I think you should go back and tell Mother Yashoda that we have right now, if we follow with you, Kongso has so many other demons who wants to also attack us, and they will follow us. So we should not go and disturb the Brajavasis. If you go alone and we stay here, then the demons will stay here, try to attack. Within a short time, we'll finish all of them. You saw it today, Kongso is dead. So we'll finish all them and we'll come back. That was the final conclusion.
Yeah.
But even that took 3 months for Nanda Maharaj to come.
Thank you, Prabhu. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah, there's just so much depth to that mood of separation, that longing and separation and Krishna's pastimes. And yeah, thank you, Prabhu. What else? Any other thoughts or reflections? Oh, yes, Prabhu. Do you mind getting her the mic, Prabhu? Oh, did you have a point?
Hare Krishna, thank you so much for a wonderful class. Mm-hmm. So regarding mystic yoga being insufficient and how we must have bhakti, we must have Krishna as an inner anchor. So I have a personal experience. About 50 plus years ago, I was studying mystic yoga with a great devotee of Lord Shiva. And because of his Shakti, I was having some modicum of success and incredible experiences, meeting with him on mountaintops and incredible experiences. But then my life fell apart and I was stuck in this body like a bag of rocks. Because if you have emotions going on, you're not going to be able to practice mystic yoga. Mm. And as hard as I tried, mystic yoga was just not coming to me. So make a long story short, go a little further. I decided, okay, well, I guess the next step, my whole life changed. And I thought, well, now I have to start worshiping Lord Shiva because that was the next step. With this mystic yogi that I was studying with. But I didn't know where to worship Lord Shiva, so I thought, well, I had met the devotees time and again on the streets of New York, and I thought, I'll call the devotees. They'll be able to tell me. So I called the devotees, and I said, can you tell me, is there a temple nearby where Lord Shiva can be worshipped? And the voice at the other end said, no. But I can tell you that if you worship Lord Krishna, Lord Shiva will be very happy because he's a foremost devotee of Lord Krishna. So I said, what's your address? And the rest is history.
Thank you, Prabhu. Thanks for sharing that. Any other thoughts or reflections on anything? One point I was thinking about was, you know, with devotees, they have a mood of separation, right? You know, they're mood of service and separation. And on the other hand, I was reading the Ramayana the other day, and Ravana, he was given, you know, he was a great yogi himself, more, you know, he was able to do a lot of austerities and get a lot of powers, right? And but his ahankara, he just didn't realize that, you know, Ram is the Supreme Personality, got it. And so with the devotees, there's separation and longing. And with the demons, Krishna sends a lot of hints. With Ravana, Krishna was sending, Ram was sending a lot, you know, he sent Hanuman, and then of course, there was Hanuman, then there was Vibhishan also trying to give him good advice. And then finally, in the battlefield, after all the various warriors were killed, Ram and Ravana were fighting themselves. They were fighting to, and then Ram was able to destroy his bows, cut off a bunch of his arms, destroy his chariot, kill his charioteer, and then Ravana was just there, you know, facing Ram. And Ram could have killed Ravana right then, but at that moment, Ram thought, okay, it's the end of the day, you're tired. So he actually let him go. And then he said, come back tomorrow with weapons, yeah. Was that, yeah. And I was just thinking about it that, you know, Rama or Krishna, they give so many hints, so many messages, you know, for the devotees, the separation, for the demons. So I was thinking on a personal level, on a personal level, you know, we have both the divine and the demoniac. So I was thinking from my demoniac side, Krishna sends a lot of signs, a lot of signs, and I have to pay attention to it. And the devotee side, you know, my devotee side asks for service and longs for service and so forth. And then Krishna is like, all right, well, let me send you service, let me send you a bunch of signs, but you better listen to it. Don't be like a Ravana. Of course, Ravana, you know, his role was not to listen. And finally, the next day, Lord Ram killed Ravana. But I was just reflecting how is the opposite, it can be the opposite with those who are against Krishna. And Krishna is merciful in that sense that he sends messages, you know, through different angles, to different people. And, you know, his own wife also, Mandodari, was trying to tell Ravana, like, just give Sita up. You know? And of course, even his advisors at one point, well, Vibhishana was the strongest, you know, he was the strongest in telling him, you're doing the wrong thing. But even Kumbhakarna, it snipped at him one point. He said, well, you didn't ask us before kidnapping Sita. Now you're coming to us for help now that Ram is going to attack. But a lot of people tried to put some sense into Ravana, but he just didn't listen. Anyways, that was one reflection also. What else? Any other thoughts, comments, reflections on any of the, any on the verse or anything else? No? All right. If not, we'll end the class here. Granthasya Bhagavatam ki. Shri Prabhupada ki.